This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey y'all, welcome back to Pick Blast and Gym Class. This week, I'm talking to Emily Liddell, a wheelchair-using communications consultant and disability activist whose work has been recognized by the American Association of People with Disabilities and also got to live out some major goals when she appeared on Sesame Street as a child.
Even though I was born with my disability, I still went through a very, very long period of time where I was like, if I'm in the room with someone else who also has a visible disability, then everyone will realize that I have a disability, and that just makes it really weird, and I'm really self-conscious. And I don't want anyone looking at me like that. So, yeah, I mean, it took me a really long time to be like, yeah, I'm in a wheelchair. What are you going to do?
Don't be late for class. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Pick Blast and Gym Class. We are here in Austin, Texas during South by Southwest, actually crashing and throwing a party in Emily Liddell's hotel room. So thanks for having us.
You are so welcome. I am glad to be partying with all of you.
Why don't you give me a little bit of information about yourself?
Sure. So I'll give you my elevator pitch. So I am a disability rights activist, a communications consultant, writer, speaker, podcaster, editor. I wear a lot of hats, but I do it all within the niche of disability-related advocacy.
Okay, cool. Before I get like into the meat of the conversation, I did see a fun fact about you.
Oh boy, here it comes.
Can you tell me about Sesame Street?
I can tell you about
Sesame Street. Can you tell me how to get to Sesame Street?
So, yes, when I was 10, I was on Sesame Street. My mother likes to tell me that I'm still milking this and I should really stop now.
No, you should milk it forever.
So I went to a summer camp for kids with disabilities, and they were looking for someone to come on the show who had a disability to replace the child who was acting on the show previously who had a disability, but she was aging out. And so they called my summer camp.
Brutal.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So they called my summer camp, and they were like, we're looking for talent. They were like, we have an annoying, precocious, like 8 or 9 year old kid.
She's not shy.
So I did one interview, got a call back, did the second interview, and I ended up getting the part. So that was really my first adventure in disability related advocacy. It just happened to be on a very public platform.
That's amazing. Who's the biggest diva out of all the Sesame Street characters?
Probably Oscar. Definitely a diva.
I believe that.
Definitely
I believe that. Who's your favorite?
All of them, and I'm not kidding. I love all of them. But Elmo did give me a little kiss on the cheek, so he, you know.
Things got serious.
Yeah,
I see.
It was real.
But for the most part, that's a pretty diplomatic answer for the most part, but I see a little sweet spot for Elmo. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Did Sesame Street, was that kind of the thing that launched you into the disability rights life that you find yourself in now?
You know, I think that when I was 10, I was not at all conscious of the meaning behind a platform like that.
Yeah.
I was just enjoying myself and probably not appreciating what was going on enough, to be quite honest. But when I got older, kind of looking back on it, I realized that that was a jumping off point that most people don't have the privilege to experience. And so I think it was kind of the start for me of realizing that being outspoken about disability instead of hiding it was how I was going to live my life.
Yeah, and I think, like, Sesame Street does a really good job of showing diversity, but, like, in a really welcoming way. I think a lot of times, like, as far as disability advocacy goes, sometimes I feel like it's just, like, you feel like you're just angrily shouting into a void.
Oh, my God, yes.
And like Sesame Street's a good platform because that's an inclusive environment to see somebody in. So that's super cool.
Yeah, I totally know what you mean about shouting into the void, because this happens to me all the time where it's like, you think that when you're tweeting something, you're making this big difference, and then you realize that you're just in your bubble. And so my goal with activism lately has been to get outside of that bubble and remind people that we don't exist in a vacuum.
Yeah, that's huge. I mean, I definitely know what you mean about Twitter. Sometimes I'll go on Twitter and I'm like, this is the big one. I'm like, this is profound. And like, you see no activity on that one at all. Yeah, it's
like, this is going to go viral.
And you're like, no one loved that besides me. And it does feel like shouting into a void. And I think sometimes, like, I'm slowly coming into the world of disability advocacy kind of like the same way. Like, it's not necessarily something that I feel like people set out to do. You just kind of live your life, and then all of a sudden you're presented with opportunities and you're like,
yeah,
I guess this is what I do now.
Yeah, well, I think that the blessing and curse of disability is that, especially when it's visible, you're sort of thrown into being an advocate whether you want to be or not. Like, so people can see your prosthetic and people can see my wheelchair. And so that automatically makes us like a walking and rolling teachable moment.
Exactly. Basically. We are the mascots of disability.
Basically, yeah.
We go.
Yeah.
You're just always, yeah, you're like, we're the welcoming committee, which sometimes I find that to be difficult. I don't know, like, if that's the same thing for you, because not every day you're like in the mood to be, the welcoming committee.
Yeah. There are days where I have to swallow the fact that I'm about to snap at somebody. But I also find myself realizing that it's so much bigger than me, because if I snap at someone who is probably well-meaning, then they're going to be like, oh my God, people with disabilities are awful.
Just like, why are they so rude?
Yeah. So then suddenly you're like this de facto spokesperson for disability. So I have to be always on.
Yeah.
Like, the on switch is always there for me. I can never just turn it off and go about
just
my day.
Just be like a salty little salt cracker.
No, I'm just salty and private.
Like, I just hold that deep down. I love that. So going on with life, kind of falling into this disability advocacy world, you started a blog. Will you tell me about your blog?
Yeah. So after college, I did an internship program in Washington, D.C., and I was paired with a mentor who is also a writer, blogger, podcaster, and she was like, listen, you need to capitalize on the skills that you've been gaining while you're here. Why don't you start a blog? So I went home, brainstormed the name with my family, and my mom came up with the name Words I Wheel By, kind of a play on Words I Live By. And so I started this blog and was pretty much just excited that, like, my grandma was going to read it.
Yeah. Like, thanks, grandma.
Yeah. And, she'd call me and be like, I read your latest blog post. And I was like, thank you. Somebody knows what I'm writing.
Yes. Not shouting into the void.
Yeah, exactly.
At least grandma's getting it.
But then I actually got a comment from someone who I did not know at all. And I can't remember the context of the comment, but I just know that there was this huge impactful moment where I was like, someone I don't know was also affected by what I had to say. And this is really powerful for me to see that I'm somewhat getting beyond the void, even if it's one person. And so after that moment, I just kind of kept the ball rolling with my writing, and it's been a journey. I know that sounds so cliche, but it has been a journey for me.
So your blog, did it start out kind of more as just like, this is my life, this is everyday stuff?
So it was actually pretty focused on disability issues.
Okay.
But to be fair, that kind of is my everyday life.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, it was kind of a blog about my life.
Yeah.
So it was originally just sort of a platform for me to mull over things that were affecting me or that were current events or things like that from a disability perspective. But it sort of snowballed from there into a freelance writing career where I became someone who, I guess, I still have trouble wrapping my mind around this, but became a go-to to write about disability issues. So
yeah,
that's where the journey part comes from.
They're like, you're an expert. You're like, am I?
Imposter syndrome is real.
It's real. Like, the closer you get to like the things you're working towards, the more you're like, I don't know what I'm doing. I have no idea. So the blog kind of just projected into a lot of other projects from there.
Yes.
One of my personal favorites is the Vice thing that you worked on.
Yeah, so there was a video that I did with Vice. It was me and two other people who have disabilities, one of whom is a good friend of mine. And it was sort of talking about how to interact with someone who has a disability without being weird about it,
yeah.
which is a concept to people.
Yeah, it really is. That is something that, like, I feel like I've run into, my story with disability is weird because I acquired it. So I feel like I've seen both sides of the table. Because at first, like, I was never around disability. It was nothing my family talked about. It made me uncomfortable when I would see it, like, just in the world. And maybe, you know, that's probably because, one, I'm young and my parents, bless them. But they didn't, like, really introduce me to that minority group. We weren't around it. I didn't see it. And then, yada, yada, yada. Now I'm here. And I realized, I was like, oh, my entire identity hasn't changed. This is just something that I use. And I give great parking. But other than that, I always thought that there was something, I wouldn't say developmentally different, but, like, it just felt like it was something so different and distant and far away from me. And I think we run into that a lot with interacting with people. I don't know. Like, what are your experiences with that?
Yeah, I think that people do not recognize that disability is just another part of the human experience.
Yeah.
And so I had, you know, similar issues. Even though I was born with my disability, I often found myself being like, if I'm in the same room as someone else who has a disability, it's going to call so much attention to my own. And then everyone's going to figure out my secret, my very obvious secret.
Yeah, you're
secret.
Like, no one can know.
And yeah, so the biggest compliment someone used to be able to pay me was, oh, I forgot you were in a wheelchair. And I was like, oh, thank you. But now I'm like, why? Like, that's just, it's part of me.
Yeah.
And also, I would prefer you not forget, because when you forget, then you also invite me somewhere that has stairs.
Yeah, you're like, that I can't get into.
And so, I mean, but yeah, it was definitely a long period of grappling with that shame before I was like, yeah, this is okay.
Yeah, I think people with disabilities, like, it's in a sick way, like, we almost have the upper hand because so many people identify, like, their identities are wrapped in their bodies. And when you have, like, when your body doesn't work as well, like, you have to adapt to different ways to finding out who you are and creating an identity, not despite of your disability, but, like, with it, because, you know, it's got to come
along.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like, you know, she got to come along.
I get very frustrated when people say, like, oh my God, you do these amazing things in spite of your disability or despite your disability. And it's like, no, I do it with them.
Yeah, no,
or,
they're coming
or with
along.
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
It comes along for the ride, whether I want it to or not, which I do want it to now, because I feel like it's a big part of my life and has honestly brought me so many opportunities.
Yeah. I'll get that a lot. I get that with the leg thing. People be like, if you could have two legs again, would you? And at this point, I'm like, don't wish that evil on me. Like, this, my job is going great. Like, things are going great. No. No.
Yeah, exactly.
My life would be so different now. I find that people are careless a lot of times, like, with rhetoric when it comes to disability. Like, you see on the news or you hear somebody say, like, oh, you know, so-and-so wheelchair bound. And every time I hear the B word, like, I just, like, I'm like, I want to scream. Do you run into that a lot?
Or confined to a wheelchair?
Confined. Stop. Yeah. It. Like just, a mummy.
Yeah. or wheelchair bound. There's a lot of people in the disability community who are like,
or suffering.
Yeah.
Suffering
or suffering. Right.
Ugh,
but God. They'll be like, bound is like a kinky thing. Like,
you're like,
when you say bound, that means ropes. I'm not bound to anything. Like, this is my freedom.
Yeah.
This is how I get around. And so when people are like, oh, wheelchair bound, suffering from a disability, I'm just like, I'm none of those
You're
things.
You're like, suffering.
Yeah.
Not, are you okay? are you going to be okay? So tell me a little bit more about Rooted in Rights. Did that kind of stem from the blog? Like, what is the origin of that?
Yeah. So I have spent many years at this point sharing my own story through writing, and I realized that words are a really powerful tool for educating people. And I try to talk about disability in a way that's accessible to other people. So I always say that if you want the world to be accessible to the disability community, then you need to make the experiences of disability accessible to the world. And not everybody likes that approach because they feel like it puts the burden on us to teach. But at the same time, I don't mind extending to people stories about my experience if it will help increase understanding and acceptance. So when I realized that writing was so powerful for me personally, I realized that hopefully I could bring that to other people. And so I was invited to be the editor-in-chief of Rooted in Rights. And
it's like such a grown-up status.
Right, yeah.
You made it.
I made it, or they just handed me the title and were like, here, do what you want with it. So originally I actually was not going to take on that project. I said, no, I had major imposter syndrome and I was like, I'm not going to do this. But then I was asked a second time and I was like, okay, guess we're going to do this. So I built the blog basically from the ground up and we published perspectives from disabled people all over the world, people of multiple marginalized identities, people who talk about experiences from a disability perspective that we don't normally think about, whether it's sex or parenting, employment, education, whatever the case may be. So now it's less about sharing my story and more about amplifying the stories of other people.
Yeah, so, making it a collective experience.
Yeah. Almost. Because if you've met one disabled person, you've met one disabled person. And people don't realize that. So it's really important for me to help other people get their stories out there so that you're hearing from a multitude of perspectives instead of just one person telling you what it's like. Because what it's like for me is not what it's like for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And on and on.
That's the thing about, like, when I get asked a lot about para, because I'm a significantly more impacted category than, like, a below-the-knee amputee. I've gotten asked, like, my race times, and I'll tell them, and I've had people be like, that's not that fast. You're like, well, like, well, you're right. Objectively, not that fast. For me, pretty good. But, I've told people, too, as well as in para, it's really hard to organize those categories because not one disability is created equal. Like even the people that I am kind of grouped with, there's a lot of nuances. There's just a lot. And the experience is different. And that's so true. I've never thought about people like that. You do have a lot of interactions with people. They're like, my aunt was in a wheelchair one time, but she died when I was six. And you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, so you definitely get
you're
it.
Like, yeah. You're
yeah.
Like,
or the person who's like, it. I broke my pinky once. So I know how hard it is for you. And I'm like, first of all, I don't want your sympathy or your pity. Second of all, you don't actually understand.
Yeah, you're like, that's really far from yeah. my experience, but I'm sorry for your loss. And you're like,
I'm really
sorry for your hard time.
Sorry about your great uncle's dog.
Exactly.
yeah, but I mean, so this is why I really hate terminology like differently abled or special needs. It just drives me.
Yeah, you're
up
like,
the
say
wall.
Disabled. It's not a bad word.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I am disabled. I'm cool with that.
Yeah, you're like, I know.
Yeah,
like, someone told me.
It's not a surprise.
I found out.
Yeah, and also, like, differently abled makes no sense to me because everyone has different abilities. So, like, if you're not disabled, you are still differently abled. So it just kind of cancels it out. I don't get it.
It doesn't, yeah. It makes your head hurt.
Yeah, and then special needs also doesn't make sense to me because I'm not really sure why my needs are more special than someone else's needs. I always say, like, my actual special needs are please fan me and feed me grapes.
Yeah.
That would be fantastic.
That's a great need.
Yeah.
I am starting to feel like I have a need like that.
Right? Yeah. Like, the other day I was talking with a friend of mine and she was like, yeah, my special need is I want people to drive me around all the time. I was like, exactly.
Ugh, yes.
Exactly. So that's what I think of when I think of special. I'm not special. I'm like a person.
You're like, I kind of wish I was special because yeah. the way that, you know, when I go to the DMV.
Then you can cut to the front of the line.
Like,
yeah.
No, yeah. I mean, like, I don't know. I'm like, they don't let me go to the front of the line. I'm
yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah. Or it's really patronizing because if you're calling someone special or if you're calling them inspiring, it should really be for a reason. And that's what people are missing. I'm not inspiring because I got out of bed this morning.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm inspiring because I
gave a bomb speech.
Yeah.
At South by
maybe
Southwest.
I did that today. Yeah. You know, and that was great. And then if you say I'm inspiring, I'm going to be like, thank you. And then I'm going to go back and like tuck that away in my little.
Bye now. Yeah.
Yeah. Tuck it in my little compliment pocket and go on with my day. But when people are like, I am so inspired by you. You're so brave. I'm like, Why? Because I also brushed my teeth this morning?
I run into that a lot. It's like the grocery store pumping gas. It's like when you're doing the most, like, just menial tasks, people are like, you're such an inspiration. And you're like, my gas bill is $17 if you feel so inclined.
Yeah, you can pay for that.
Not that inspiring. You're like, oh, okay. I see you now.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
At Sephora, we know how you love to use makeup, skincare, hair care, and fragrances that work for you, but also how important it is to be in the know about the ingredients that are in them, which is why we created Clean at Sephora. Curated products from brands like Merit, Amika, Summer Fridays, and Fleur that have everything you want, minus certain ingredients you might not. Clean at Sephora is only at Sephora. Shop now at Sephora.com.
So as we go on, like, with the world of disability advocacy, like, the more that I realized that I was, like, I'm being an advocate, my life experience has been, like, that disability transcends so many other things. And I know that you're on the board for WAM NYC. Will you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so that's the NYC chapter of an organization called Women, Action, and the Media. And my goal was to bring the disability perspective to an organization that's already focusing on diverse representation in media, but also for it to be not just a give, but also a take in a very positive way, in that I recognize that although I'm disabled, there are many minority experiences that I cannot relate to. And so I really wanted to be part of something bigger than myself, bigger than that bubble of disability that we're always stuck in, so that we could focus on how people of different minorities can all be working together to lift each other up and amplify the work that we're doing. So for me, being on WAM NYC's board has been another opportunity to step outside that sort of pigeonholed route that I've been taking when it comes to disability advocacy.
Yeah, well, it's like, it's so funny because I always tell people, I'm like, the weird thing about disability, even though we're a minority, we're the world's largest minority.
It's my favorite statistic.
We take everybody. Like, yeah, I'm like, but we are equal opportunity, so we'll take everybody. It doesn't matter what you look like, who you're attracted to, we'll take it all. Yep. We'll take them all.
Yeah, I joke about that a lot. On the one hand, it's actually kind of sad that we have to, like, keep going back to we're the world's largest minority because we don't have other statistics right now. That's, like, our go-to statistic. Yeah. It's like
we're the biggest.
Yeah, like, we're 20% of the population. One in five people in the United States has a disability. You know, like, it's all about
how ambiguous,
big
yeah.
we are. Mm-hmm. But, you know, then you start looking at statistics like media representation and you realize that there isn't any or hardly any. And that's why being outside of just the void that I'm constantly talking into with disability has been really important to me, because I want to see those statistics. I want to see that representation. I want it to be the norm, you know, the rule and not the exception.
Well, yeah, and also because... And you're going to have to tell me your opinion on seeing disability in the media, because, like you know, it's 2019, like, Hollywood, like, they're trying, but it's still, like, it's hard, I feel like, still to see disability portrayed in the media where the character, like, the whole identity is just who they, about, like, their personality and not the fact that they are just feeling the disability quota criteria.
Yeah, it would be great to see a fully developed character where it's not like, this is our disabled character, or not someone who's just there to make you cry or just there to make you feel inspired. It's, you know, we're lacking the nuance and the complexity right now of the human experience when you have a disability. And that's a pretty big bummer, honestly.
It's a huge bummer. And also, yeah, it's like you just never see, like, how come we're never the lead? Like, we're never the hero. You never see, I don't know. Like, I'm just like, in my life, I'm the hero. So, I mean, and you're like,
I am the princess.
Yeah,
I am
like the queen. I'm the lead character in my life. And
that's a real thing, though. Like, growing up, not having anybody who looks like you, and the media makes you think that you're not worthy of a job, you're not worthy of love, you're not worthy of succeeding in life. And, you know, when that's the narrative that's driven home, and then, you know, you have to fight against it and be like, no, I am worthy of all these things. That's a lot to grapple
it's
with.
It's a big hurdle. And I think, I know, like, when I do some of my work, some of the responses I get are actually from parents, because I never thought about even that as a little kid, because, like, we never had people that looked like us, basically, growing up. You're like, well, I just want to do this, so I guess I'll go do it. And I think, like, the idea of having a role model that does more than just exists out of inspiration and just blows kisses and stuff, like that's so important to have people that are dynamic and smart and changing the world, but also that we look like, that we look different than what you normally see.
Yeah, so I'm lucky in that my mom and my uncle have the same disability that I do. So I grew up around two adults who were already killing it.
Yeah.
So
slaying it.
Yeah. Nice. So I was like, nice. I know I'm going to be okay.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the back of my mind, I know I'm going to be okay. But other than that, you know, there was not a whole lot of disability in my life. And so I just didn't see people who were killing it beyond those, that very narrow scope.
Yeah.
I wish I had that growing up. I wish that someone had showed me that looking into the future, you are going to have a successful career. You're going to have relationships. You know, you're going to figure out a life path.
It's important. I think, do you find like that you have parents or kids writing you as well, like in that regard?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that parents of kids with disabilities are still fed the message that their kid is going to live a miserable life. And so having parents reach out to me and be like, oh, but you're actually doing cool things. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, you're like, I'm killing it.
Your kid's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. Fine and easy are very different things. Like, you're going to be fine. Not going to be easy, but you're going to be fine.
Yeah. Well, and, like, whose life is easy, honestly? Like,
exactly.
No one's life is easy.
Yeah. So I just want people to be realistic.
Yeah.
Like, there needs to be a happy medium. There's, I think, sometimes the stereotype that disabled people are happy all the time, and then there's this stereotype that we're really, really bitter. What about the in-between? Because one day I'm happy and one day I'm bitter. Sometimes I'm both within 5 minutes.
Exactly. You're like, I could be everything.
Yeah, but it's like me and everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
that's not exclusive.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just, when parents and kids reach out to me, I just want them to know that, like, you're going to handle this.
Yeah.
It might not be super easy, and I don't mean to sound like a motivational speaker, because I actually don't like the whole, like, you could do it, you know, but you can.
You can do it. Yeah,
yeah,
you'll be fine.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be, like, you know, like fireworks and stuff.
Exactly,
behind you, but,
exactly.
You know, I feel that. So, talking about Hollywood and representation of disability in the media, are there any particular characters that you've seen over the years that are people that are disabled that stick out to you in your memory? Good, bad, indifferent.
So in terms of the bad, or in fact the ugly, Me Before You was such a pop culture phenomenon. Everybody loved the book and everybody loved the movie.
I hated that movie.
It was, you know, all about this guy who becomes a quadriplegic and, you know, he lives this very sad existence and he wants to pursue assisted suicide. But then, of course, his caregiver doesn't want him to. And it's just, it's a hot mess. And it sends this awful message that disabled lives are not worth living.
Yeah.
And the thing is that while it's sending that message, everyone is, like, boo-hooing over it and, like, this is a beautiful story. And it's like, no, this is really, like, this is mean.
This is, like, kind of messed up.
I feel personally attacked.
I saw that movie on the plane and I was, like, getting mad at my seat partners. I'm like, this isn't real. Because I think, like, the idea of that movie, too, is that he thought his own existence was so miserable. And like, now it's like, okay, if you see somebody with a disability, are we all just, like, secretly crying on the inside all the time? And you're like, I mean, I'm chilling. There's some days that are, I'm annoyed.
I might be crying on the inside because, like, they messed up my order at a restaurant or something.
Yeah, you're like, you know, like that,
that's my existence, to be quite honest.
Can you think of any show or movie in particular that have done a good portrayal of somebody with a disability?
So I have kind of a controversial opinion on this because, on the one hand, I'm very passionate about actually disabled people playing disabled characters.
Because there are disabled actors, fun fact.
Yeah, for the world. Really good disabled actors, yes. Too. On the other hand, there is a show called Superstore, and there's a character named Garrett, and he's in a wheelchair in the show, but not in real life.
Yeah.
But I love him because he's just so on the nose about ridiculous disability humor. And I know that this is all, like, fake and coming from a writer's room, and it's not authentic, and I get that, but
he does do a good job.
Yeah.
I do like that show.
I like him. I like him because it's not woe is me. He's just another employee who makes really bad jokes, sleeps with other people, you know, like, just a dude.
Just lives life.
Yeah. But the disability jokes, like, Superstore disability joke game is strong, you know, so I really like that.
Someone's got a friend. Somebody knows something.
But then, you know, there's also more authentic portrayals like the show Speechless, which I appreciate because they actually use actors who have disabilities. So that's great. And it's a start. But that's the problem, is that we're still very much at the starting point, and I'm waiting for it no longer to be a phenomenon.
That's like, so, like, you know, I'm sure you get like 100,000,000 emails every day, all the time. And I just recently, it probably wasn't even that recent. This is so embarrassing. Time is a construct created by man.
It is.
But at one point recently, I received an email about, what was it, the 25th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act?
Oh, yeah.
And
that,
like,
was
25
in 2015.
Years. Like, yeah, you're like, that was not that long ago. And, like, again, like, we've been on this planet for arguably longer than 25 years. Okay, so we've heard the good, the bad. If you got a call tomorrow and you were given an opportunity to write a show to portray somebody with a disability, what's the show?
So I joke around all the time with my family, my boyfriend, my friends, that we need our own reality show. And I know there's already a ton of reality shows that have disability, but I think the problem with a lot of them is that it feels very objectifying. Mm-hmm. Whereas for me, if I was going to write a show, it would literally just be like daily life. It would not be staged. It would not be about teachable moments. It would literally just be, here are disabled people living our lives. I think probably one of the closest shows that's come to that is Push Girls. It was on.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I love that show.
It was on a while ago now. But even more chill than that, because I think that that's what people need right now. Right now, we have the disability sitcom, and we have sitcom characters with disabilities, and we have, you know, the heart-wrenching portrayals in movies, but we don't just have people, like, living their lives that's not totally staged for television.
Yeah, I think there's a misconnect because we see, again, you see the portrayals of people with disabilities, but for the mainstream, they can't find something that they identify with in themselves with that person. You know, it seems so far away still.
Yeah, even Push Girls felt very far away for me because they're super glamorous and gorgeous. And
yeah, I'm just like, who's got money for all those hair extensions?
Right, and I'm like, I don't wear high heels in my wheelchair.
That's a lot. And they all have those glitter wheels, and, like, those are expensive.
Yeah, I know. I mean, but that was a really powerful moment for me to see that on TV. But, you know, if a network executive called me, I'd be like, I literally want to see someone who looks like me. It doesn't need to be me. I just want someone who looks
like me. Yeah, who, like, you know, who just is a normal person. And also, by the way, we're pretty funny as a community, I feel like.
Hilarious.
We're pretty funny.
Hilarious.
Emily, you've also written about politics on both sides of the aisle. Today, where do you think we stand?
So I try very hard to take the approach that all candidates and all elected officials need to bring disability into their platforms. I do not care if you are a Republican, if you are a Democrat, if you're an independent, if you're some other party, I want disability to be a part of your platform.
Yeah.
So it's not even so much about my personal politics when I'm writing, as it is about the fact that I want disability to be a bipartisan issue. So I talk about that a lot. I talk about the fact that we need to recognize that disability rights impact all human beings. And so I am very outspoken and passionate about my political views, but when it comes down to it, it's really most important to me that whoever is elected cares about making disability a part of their platform.
It's true. I mean, like, you see so many things that were originally created for people with disabilities, like closed captioning, I don't know, ramps, like what else? There's a ton of like door handles, like actual to be able to like open the door handles. So many things that were designed initially, I think, with the disabled in mind, but then you find that the collective benefits off of it. And just like you said, people forget like a disability issue is pretty much like an everybody issue.
Yeah. And also something that I struggle with a lot is why is there still stigma against disability when, in fact, one day you might want the world to be disability friendly because you have a disability?
Yeah.
But I just don't think we've gotten there yet in terms of our evolution of thinking. I think right now disability is this very scary and intimidating thing. And it's also still a big deal when it's included in political platforms. It's still sort of like a touch point. It's like, oh, look, I'm doing a good thing by including disability. But it can't be about paying lip service. It has to be about recognizing the humanity of the people who you're representing.
So you do a lot of, you get your hands like in a lot of different piles. You also have your own podcast.
I do, yes. So me and one of my very best friends in the whole world, Kyle Khachaturian, co-host a podcast called The Accessible Stall. So basically, it's just our place to keep it real about disability issues.
That's amazing. The Accessible Stall. Phenomenal. So I'm relatively new to podcasting. And would you have any tips for me as I continue on this journey?
So the biggest thing that I think I've learned from podcasting is don't be afraid to really speak your mind about things. Put some controversial opinions out there. Be willing to start a dialogue. Be willing to listen to the feedback that people give you. Because I have definitely said some things while podcasting that I've realized afterwards were something that I needed to learn from because it wasn't the right thing to say. There have been some times where I felt very passionately about something, but had my mind changed about it through podcasting. So I think that podcasting is a learning opportunity. And I'm well over 2 years into it with my co-host now. And it's a different adventure every single time we do it because there's always a new topic to talk about. There's always a new way to look at something. And there's always people who are messaging us and pushing back on what we're saying or agreeing with what we're saying or even saying that they're feeling less alone because they were listening to our show. So, yeah, it's about learning, listening, and connecting with other people.
I love that. Being open to perspectives.
Yeah.
Other than your own.
Yeah, podcasting is a mind-opening thing. It really is because there have been so many times when I've shared my own personal experiences, feeling alone about it, and had somebody send a message to the show and be like, me too. I thought I was, you know, the only one, but like this happens to me and it feels good.
Yeah. There's something to be said for that solidarity. We forget, like, it seems like such an isolating experience, but again, like with the blessings of, and the curses, but the blessings of social media, of podcasts, of being connected in the world that we are now, like it makes it more accessible.
Yeah. Podcasting is about making different perspectives more accessible to people. And I think it's a gift. I love podcasting. It's actually right now my only thing that I consistently do that's a passion project for me. Everything else
has turned into work.
Yeah, it's always work. The podcast is a lot of work, especially because when you're in such a niche, when you're talking about disability all the time, it's hard to get out of that niche. So we work really hard to get out of it. But I really enjoy podcasting. And it's probably the one thing that I don't think anyone could take away from me is that it's my passion to be able to do that.
That's good. That's uplifting.
Yeah.
Plus, it is weird. It dawned on me the other day. I was like, once these are out, like, it's forever. I'm like, your opinion is going to exist forever.
Well, that's where the learning experience part comes from, because there definitely have been a couple times on the podcast where we've said things and then we've been called out on it. And that's hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard. Nobody wants to hear that they're wrong. Nobody wants to hear that they're, you know, saying something that's not cool. But it's also a really human thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's probably one of the most human forms of media, I think, that we have.
That's what it's all about, that human connection, that human experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Emily, thank you so much again for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much to Emily Liddell for joining us today. She can be found on Twitter at Emily_Liddell. Also, thanks for checking out Pick Blast and Gym Class, and special thanks to DCP Entertainment. You can follow me and all my fun moments at Lacey Is Your Friend on Instagram.